Well, nothing epitomizes the dystopian nature of modern capitalism better than President Donald J. Trump. He is a billionaire real estate developer and celebrity grifter who's wormed his way into the most powerful position in the world. He's a man who claims to support ordinary Americans while he unleashes historic attacks upon unions and workers' rights and gives huge tax cuts and benefits to the rich. He's a man who claims to have ended five, six, seven wars. He changes his mind based on the day, to the extent that he rang up the Swedish government a few weeks ago just to raise them whether they had thought about giving him the Nobel Peace Prize for this year, considering all the great work that he's done around the world, even while he says that Israel can do whatever it wants with Gaza. A man and behind him a movement that wants to make an already shit world even shitter. He wants to make the world more conservative, more racist, more sexist, more authoritarian, more violent, more unhealthy, more unequal, and more dominated by the 1%. Now, Trump is often presented as a kind of social aberration, a political freak who has fluked his way into power. However, Trump's ascension to power reflects a lot about the nature of capitalism, much more than it goes against the grain of it. Trump and Trumpism has deep social roots. And so in this talk, I want to explore what these roots are and explain the kind of three different ways in which Trump and capitalism are interconnected. Now, Trump often presents himself as a break with the recent past. He presents himself as a true outsider, rebelling not just against the traditions of the Democratic Party, but against the Republican establishment as well. When you place his ideas, though, in a longer historical background, it becomes very clear that a lot of his core ideas and practices have been long advocated for by the conservative right wing in America and are not as new as he claims. So this is the first aspect that I'm going to look at. The second is this. Because Trump does and says all sorts of, zany, bizarre, crazy things, it can be easy to dismiss him on that basis. And in fact, that's what a lot of the kind of mainstream and liberal media do. They don't attack Trump because he's running an evil US capitalist empire. They attack him because they say that he is running such an empire in a stupid, incompetent manner, which threatens the stability of the system. And this disguises the fact that there is a cold, dark, and savage capitalist logic to what Trump is doing. And the third way in which Trump is connected to capitalism is this. Trump seems to have a lot of hatred towards many long-standing institutions of capitalism. He decries the deep state, the Washington swamp, the United Nations, the courts when they don't go his way, Europe, the media, and so forth. For the most part, those institutions don't like him back. But this disguises another important facet of the Trump presidency. His rise to power was paved by the actions of his apparent enemies, the liberal establishment most of all. And it's the continued weakness of his opponents that is key to the appearance of strength around Trump's administration. So I'll start with the point about how a lot of his ideas are not totally new, have roots in the conservative movement going back many decades. So the first aspect of this, I think, is something which people call the private life of power. And this is the concept that the rich and powerful in America should basically be able to do whatever they want, that they shouldn't be constrained by government intervention, by legal restrictions, by so-called wokeness, by, concerns over social rights or morals or ethics or any of that. Instead, the rich and powerful should be able to use their wealth and their power to do whatever they want with that. And often this goes along with the idea that they are geniuses who have come to their wealth and power through their great, amazing efforts, their amazing minds. This is really epitomized in Trump's own semi-written book, The Art of the Deal. People have read it, where it opens with him saying that, oh, on one level, this book isn't really that useful because you can't actually teach anyone the art of the deal. The art of the deal is something that you're either born with or you're not born with. It's in your genes. It's, something you just have. You don't have it, that's fine. You can just go and, have a nice family, live your life, et cetera. But if you do have it, it's incumbent on you to use it to advance yourself and transform the world. So it's this kind of idea, right? That the rich and powerful in America super geniuses who have come to their wealth through their amazing efforts, and therefore there should be no constraints on what they can do with it. And this isn't just like an ideology, it's what Trump has attempted to do with the US government, right? He's tried to slash what he calls red tape, i.e., any regulations or constraints on big business and their ability to make money and screw over the environment, ordinary people, their opponents, and so forth. And this idea is definitely not original to Trump. It has been the standard idea of the US ruling class for its entire history, since day one. And in particular, within conservative politics, it's something which is very deeply rooted. It was a big part of Ronald Reagan's whole campaign to say that the problem in America is too much regulation on business, that we need to get America working again, was one of his big slogans, that we need to, cut any of the regulations which try to constrain them. It's embodied in things like Ayn Rand, if people unfortunately have ever heard of her, like, the American philosopher and novelist, whose most famous book, Atlas Shrugged, is all about a real, battler hero, a steel CEO who's trying to do this amazing project, but evil alliance of trade unionists, the government, academics, protesters, other businesses are all working together to stop them from building their amazing steel project across America as a part of their, hatred of big business. So this is an idea which has, deep roots within the conservative movement, both ideologically, but also in practice, of course. They've always been about cutting taxes to the rich and empowering them and supporting them. So that's one idea which has deep roots. Another idea, which is very key to Trump, is the concepts that he's carrying out a kind of a counter-revolution. The way he talks about it is that America used to be a wonderful country, and then it was perverted and destroyed by the evil forces of the Marxists, Black Lives Matter, and the feminists, and so forth, who have destroyed American culture, American politics, that made America weak, that made America underconfident, and that's why America is losing to China. That's a huge part of Trump's ideology. And again, this is hardly something original to Trump. It has deep roots within conservative politics. To go back to Ronald Reagan, it was a big part of his whole election campaign that things are great in America, and then they're destroyed by the evil 1960s and 70s, by the hippies and the feminists and so forth, that they destroyed America's great conservative political culture. And that's why I was going backwards. It's why they lost the war in Vietnam and so forth. And even before that, there's a whole attack upon the rights of trade unions and others, one from the 1930s period and the 1940s and even the early 50s. And this continued well beyond Reagan. Like in the 1990s and 2000s, there was a kind of big shift to the right amongst Republicans and conservatives in the United States. And they argued that the problem was not just with the Democrats under Bill Clinton, but also with the Republicans. They said the Republicans had gone too soft. They'd become too much like the Democrats. They were betraying, core Republican values. What Trump kind of popularized later, the idea of RINO, Republicans in name only, was popularized earlier on as a part of this kind of movement. As both extreme ends, you had people like, the Oklahoma City bomber and so forth, who saw that, the major parties in his mind had betrayed, American values. But on the, less kind of openly violent side, there was a whole right-wing backlash within the Republican Party to say it needed to move in a more hard right direction. And this was the key background to the ascension of George Bush Jr. and of Dick Cheney and the neocons. He argued that we needed to be, more aggressive and bold in American power. And this was, important background to the invasions of Afghanistan and Iraq and the kind of whole moment around the George Bush presidency. So again, it's not some total new thing. And it came up once again during the Tea Party movement under Barack Obama, where again, there was attack by the conservative right, not just against the Democrats, but against the Republican Party to say that needs to move to the right, become even more extreme. The third idea that's really a key one to Trump and also has deep roots in the conservative movement is what you could call the allure of violence. And this is one of the things that is more controversial about Trump and appears like more of a break from the past, but really is rooted in it. I think something, a kind of event which really epitomizes it is when Trump was being interviewed by Bill O'Reilly, the Fox News guy, about Putin and Russia. And O'Reilly was kind of trying to quiz Trump a bit, be like, oh, you keep saying how Putin's a really great guy, but is he really? Like, and he says, oh, isn't Putin a killer? Can we really support killers? And Trump says, oh, yeah, he is a killer, but we're killers too. We've got lots of killers in America. Like, Do you think we're such an innocent country? How do you think we defended America for so long? And like many things, there's a big element of truth in what Trump is saying, right? More truth than what the liberal establishment often say in response to him, but he's trying to defend the use of violence in pursuit of American empire. And when he said this, it was attacked not just by Democrats and traditional opponents of Trump, but by lots of people in the Republican Party who said it was outrageous that Trump was implying that we commit war crimes and violence as well. America is such a moral, ethical empire. This is about democracy and so forth. But more generally, there's this obsession with the idea that we need some kind of, war, basically, to purify America. It's epitomized by J.D. Vance and Stephen Miller in particular. They criticize things like the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, but that's not because they're pacifists or against war in general. Their argument is that they were bad wars against the wrong people for the wrong reasons, and we need to build up for a really good war, a moral, ethical war in which America will reclaim its soul again. And they've written a number of opinion pieces where they argue that the problem in America is that it's kind of too lazy and morally bankrupt. And that's because they haven't been a part of a big violent campaign to remake the world in which, real men and warriors have come forward. It's also the root of their great love of, J.R. Tolkien and Lord of the Rings and so forth, springs from this kind of, weirdo ideology. But again, while this might seem to be some kind of freak thing about Trump and his core supporters, it has a long history in the US as well. Violence is as American as apple pie, right? Like, again, going back to Ronald Reagan, he made much the same point that the problem with the Vietnam War was it led America to think that it can't wage war anymore, that it needs to reclaim the warrior spirit, is one of the things he liked to say. And this was, again, not just ideology, it was in practice. The Contra scandal, if people know about that. The appalling history of interventions into Latin America to back up dictatorships and to murder, any leftist opposition to local rulers there or to US empire more generally as being a core part of the conservative tradition. Or again, you go to George Bush and Dick Cheney, a big way they talked about Iraq was that it was necessary in order to break America out of the moral rut it found itself in. And much like Trump, they argued that the problem with the world was not that America was too violent or too powerful. It was that it wasn't using its power and violence enough. And that's what was allowing all the enemies of America to start to do bad things in the world. If only America was more willing to use military action, it would actually, somehow make the world safer and more peaceful. So support for the rich and powerful doing whatever they want, hostility to the left, a valorization of violence, racism, sexism, and nationalism, these things epitomize Trump, but they also have deep roots in the United States political system, well beyond him. However, this doesn't mean that we should be complacent about what Trump is doing. Just, it can seem like, well, he's just going along with what has happened in America for a long time. He's definitely trying to amplify it, make it even more aggressive, and as I was saying before, make a world that is already pretty shit even shitter. And there are aspects of Trump and Trumpism which definitely do go against aspects of traditional right-wing politics. So many conservatives can agree with Trump that the US should use its power more boldly in the world, but they don't agree with him that they should be, praising Putin or attacking the allies in Europe and elsewhere. And similarly, there's many right-wingers who can agree with Trump that, like, we need to do something about America's, declining fortunes vis-a-vis China, but balk at tariffs and attacks upon globalization, from which, US corporations have benefited a lot for many decades. But as I was saying earlier, too much of a focus on that, though, can disguise the fact that there is a real evil capitalist logic to what Trump is doing. It can make it seem like he's just kind of crazy, doing these weird things because of random ideas he has in his head, rather than that he has a plan to bolster US capitalism and make it more powerful and more destructive to the world. And you can see this on both a geopolitical level and on a domestic level. So internationally, Trump's argument has been criticized by a lot, the idea that, America needs to come first, that we need to be willing to rip up alliances of allies that pull their weight. We need to be willing to try and, edge Russia away from the China camp. But there is a capitalist logic to all this. Trump's argument is that the main enemy for America is China and that everything needs to be built around that. And on that, many of his opponents agree. But his argument is, well, if we're actually serious about isolating China, then that means we need to project American power more aggressively around the world. We need to force our allies to carry their weight more, pay more for the military. And yes, we need to be willing to do deals with people we might not like in order to pursue the more important goal for American empire. And we need to do so without hamstring ourselves to talk about democracy and human rights and ethics and morals and so forth, which is getting in the way of doing what is, the most essential for US capitalism. Similarly, on a domestic level, a bunch of Trump's policies can seem counterintuitive to capitalism and kind of crazy. So the one that comes up a lot is around the issue of migrant rights. A lot of critics who are not very left-wing will say, oh, I'm a racist or whatever, but isn't all these migrant workers in the interest of US capitalism? Because millions of these workers help to prop up whole sections of the low-wage economy in the United States. The fact that Trump has driven out an estimated 1.5 million migrants to the United States since he became president in less than a year, I'm sure this is bad for American capitalism, is one of the positions they put forward. And similarly, they argue that, tariffs are counterproductive, that while there's some aspects of free trade we should renegotiate, the idea that we should just wage war on globalization is silly, and that this is, actually hurting America in the long run. But again, there is, I think, a very clear destructive capitalist logic to what Trump is trying to do. On the issue of globalization and tariffs, his argument is that while we may have benefited from the, integration of China into world markets for several decades, that has also produced a clear economic and political military rival to the United States, and we need to stop them. And the only way to do that is to be willing to tear up the, networks of global trade, which previously have sustained us, or at least to reshape them in a way which more directly benefits the United States at the expense of its opponents. And the more honest kind of defenders of Trump and the people in his core circle say, even if, the world economy goes backwards and lots of people are, bankrupt and so forth, if at the end of it the gap between the United States and China is greater than what it is now, then, that's a victory. Like, even if everyone loses and we lose less than everyone else, that means America wins in the long run, right? This is not about helping the overall capitalist system. It's about helping American power in the world. That's what matters. And for too long, we've, done what's in the benefit of the system as a whole rather than US capitalism in particular, is the position that they put forward. So again, there's a very clear capitalist logic to this. And similar, like a lot of his domestic policies might, hurt particular sections of capitalism or destabilize things. They fit with Trump's agenda, which is to push back against all the rights and gains the oppressed and exploited have won over many decades, whether that's, LGBTI people or women or migrants, or importantly, whether it's workers. And this is a section of people who have been attacked a lot by Trump, but it's not been talked about as much, but it's really important. Trump has moved to sack a whole series of moderately pro-labor individuals from the National Labor Relations Board. He's intervened in a whole series of trade union pursuits. He's obviously attacked public sector workers in particular, often disguised as an attack upon the swamp, but really it's about attacking a lot of, like ordinary public servants, not like, super high paid lobbyists in Washington or something, or people running, the upper echelons of the public service. And so again, this is about making US capitalism to saying more unequal, more savage, more brutal, less with all the kind of trimmings of US capitalism that's, some wonderful democracy or it stands up for social justice. It wants to get rid of all of that and to say that American capitalism should be about enriching the rich and powerful and America first over everyone else. So I think there's a lot to fight against in terms of Trump's agenda and what he's trying to push. Whether it's his ideas, which have roots in the conservative movement going back decades, or whether it's the particular, positions that he's fighting for, which might put him at odds with some of his conservative allies, both of which, are making the world even more horrendously unequal. The third connection between capitalism and Trump, though, comes from a slightly different angle. Many politicians and institutions, which are critics of Trump, refuse to acknowledge that they helped create the world in which Trump ascended to power. And this is the case on many levels. On one level, like just personally, Trump's wealth didn't come from his great genius, it might be surprised, or his art of the deal. Obviously inherited some millions of dollars, but the way he transcended that to become a billionaire was through riding the coattails of neoliberalism and economic liberalization in the 80s, 90s, and 2000s. That's how he was able to slap his name on golden towers all around the world and promote himself as a celebrity and so forth and sell his books. It was through all the trappings of global trade and neoliberal economics that were pushed not just by the Republicans but by the Democratic Party and backed by the New York Times and so forth. Beyond just Trump as an individual, though, all the kind of key institutions that he's using to make America into a more unequal, dangerous, violent place were created on a bipartisan basis. So take the anti-immigration policies that he's pushing. These have been supported by Democrats and Republicans for many, many years. ICE was expanded and strengthened, not just by George Bush, of course, but by Barack Obama, by Joe Biden, and then again by Trump. And they've created into a huge, militarized institution that's aimed at enforcing racism in the United States and, beyond. Or when we talk about US empire, this has hardly been something just backed by the conservatives or the Republicans. The Democrats have been, if anything, the party of US imperialism par excellence. They are the party who supported, the First World War and the Second World War, the war in Korea, and for most of it, the war in Vietnam as well. It was under Obama that there was troop surges in the Middle East, and Biden really tried to ramp up the military industry under his previous presidency. So it's something which has been built by both. Just think about the Democrats' support for the state of Israel, for instance. And while Trump might be particularly obnoxious and horrible in his attack upon protesters and the left and trade unions and so forth, in this, he is also not breaking from the bipartisan political situation. After all, it was Obama who organized for the police to intervene and smash up Occupy Wall Street in 2011. And we can't forget that only 5 seconds ago, it was Joe Biden who was sending in the police to destroy the Gaza Solidarity encampments in the United States. It was Joe Biden who demonized them as anti-Semitic, who said they were violent, they were supporting terrorism and so forth, and so provided the key justifications, which Trump has then expanded to use on his attack upon, Solidarity Palestine and protesters and, the left, more generally. And having created, this whole horrible situation, the liberal establishment has also failed to stand up and fight against Trump, to any serious degree whatsoever. So to come to some conclusions, Trumpism and Trump himself is a reaction to the fragmenting instability of modern capitalism that seeks to shore up American power against its enemies abroad and against progressive tendencies at home that are reacting against the same situation. And so definitely we need to fight against Trump and Trumpism and everything he stands for. And you have to say that the problem in the United States is not that everyone loves Trump or people aren't willing to stand up to them. Only in the last 6 months, we've seen huge demonstrations in the United States, whether that is the big No Kings rallies that happened over a few months ago, enormous demonstrations in thousands of cities across the United States, whether it was the protests in LA against the ICE raids that happened there. People have been willing to stand up and protest against Trump, most definitely. And it seems like there's a new round of that starting to begin. So people might have seen on the media and so forth that there's another 2,000-3,000 rallies called for the Labor Day weekend that's coming up in the United States. There's also been very large demonstrations that haven't happened yet, but it seems like they'll be large in opposition to Trump's move to push ICE and the National Guard into Chicago, where he's mobilized them at a Navy base nearby in order to facilitate raids. And so there's people who are willing, to stand up and protest against him. Most definitely, it's highly like, all Americans support him. But there's definitely a real lack of political leadership in the fight against Trump. And you can see this, I think, in just one poll. Trump has record low approval ratings as a president at 37%, very low. But the only people who are more unpopular than Trump is the Democratic Party, have a 33% approval rating. And this is really the conundrum of the United States, right? Trump can appear to be this really strong, powerful figure, partly because he is getting away with a lot of serious attacks at home and, projecting American power abroad. But that is amplified by the weakness of his opponents, more than it is like he's such a popular figure that is totally unassailable, that no one's criticizing him and so forth. And compared to his initial election, you have to say that there's growing confidence amongst progressive and left-wing people in America that can fight back against him, and that, hopefully the tide is at least beginning to turn amongst some people. The real question, though, is will that be able to be mobilized into a serious movement that can take him on? And if that is going to happen, then it's going to have to take on not just Trump and Trumpism, but the system that promotes him, the capitalist system that created Trump, that promotes Trump, and that empowers Trump to this day.